Welcome back to National Defense. Randy Miller along with Jerry Newberry. And Joe Davis back on with us. You know, we've had Joe on before, and Joe's always great to clear some things
we
up.
We haven't had Joe on
we
before.
We have not had Joe
no,
on.
No.
I thought we had Joe on before.
We're getting fresh meat here.
Uh-oh. Yeah. Well, watch out, Joe. Joe is the Director of Public Affairs.
You're not going to be coming back on.
Yeah. Maybe that's what I meant. Here's a guy that will never be back on with us after this interview.
Joe's my counterpoint in D.C.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's... He's got his ears to the wall, and he does such a great job in D.C. Keeping us advised, and he helps keep me straight,
and clearing up some things too, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And there's some things we need to clear up, and I'm trying very hard today trying to be calm. I took my medication this morning.
Been foaming at the mouth a little bit here, Joe, so you might want to, you know.
So anyway, Joe Davis, like I said, he's the Director of Public Affairs at VFW Washington, D.C. office. What's going on, man?
Life is fun. The weather, the snow's going away, and hopefully Kansas City's going to send D.C. some 70-degree weather this weekend.
Cause it's coming your way.
That's right.
We're supposed to be like in the mid-70s today, and life is good. So it's good weather-wise. There's a lot of news coming out of D.C., as usual. But we have a new administration, new cabinet officers, so that means a lot of things to the veterans of this country. The Obama administration going in, certainly during the campaign and going into office, President Obama has said time and time again that veterans are going to be a priority in this country. And everyone knows that the administration has its budget proposal out there. And there's a lot of yelling about it, a lot of rumors. And I know every year we talk about and we hope for a budget for VA, an increase in discretionary spending that makes sense. What's the good news? What's the bad news? We got any good news in this proposed budget?
Yeah, Jerry, I mean, there's some very good news in this budget. You know, the Obama campaign, obviously, they said we're going to take care of America's veterans. And their first VA budget definitely shows that they are going to do that. On the discretionary side, and for your listeners, discretionary side basically means pretty much the funding for the Veterans Health Administration, the bricks and the mortar, the infrastructure, the hiring of doctors and nurses and other staff, and plus infrastructure improvements. So what they went and did is they proposed a discretionary funding budget of $56 billion. And this is $5.5 billion in this current fiscal year that we're in right now. And it also exceeds the independent budget recommendation that the VFW co-writes with three other large veterans organizations, and exceeds that budget recommendation by $1 billion. We do have a problem with that budget, which I'm sure we're going to get into in a minute. But in the initial...
Oh, yeah, we're going to get into it.
Let's hold that table there for just a second. But I know in the initial budget, recommendation that they proposed of the $56 billion. I mean, you've got some very, very good additions in there.
Like what?
In there. You've got additional funding to enable more veterans, Category H, to enroll into the system. It expands concurrent receipt of disabled compensation and retirement pay for medically retired veterans.
Okay, let's stop on that one, because that's an issue that, a lot of people have been screaming about concurrent receipt for a lot of years. Touch on that, will you?
Okay, for the concurrent receipt right now, people who are military retirees, 20 years or more, if you're 50% disabled and service-connected disabled, there is no offset, which means that you will be able to receive your full retirement pay plus your disability compensation from the VA. If you're below 50%, then there's still going to be a dollar-for-dollar offset, and we are fighting to get that removed as well. What the new budget proposal includes those medical retirees who did not reach their 20 full 20 years, and will allow them to keep their medical, their military disability, their military retirement, along with their disability compensation.
Yeah, because let's face it, it's strange that you can you can be a member of Congress, for example, and you're not penalized the way veterans are, right?
You could be a member of any other federal department.
Post office or IRS or...
And you would not have this offset.
Yeah.
Why penalize military when no other federal employee is penalized the same way?
Right.
It's been a head slapper for many years.
Well, at least we're finally making progress on it, and it's good to see that the budget includes additional funding for that. I have a question. You mentioned Category 8 veterans. It allowed more Category 8 veterans to enroll in the system.
Right.
Here's my question, Joe.
Right.
The VA, no secret about this, you know, I'm not that smart, so... The VA right now has a backlog, a horrible backlog, has had for years. They can't keep up. Allowing more veterans in the system, isn't that going to just add to the backlog?
It's a very, very good question. It's the stumper is going to be capacity. I mean, you look at some of the, where they're high retirees, Florida, California, Texas. Will those VA medical systems be able to open up for more Category 8? And for the listeners, Category 8 is a veteran with a non-service-connected disability. So what they're talking about is opening it up to more Category 8s. Right now, there's a income threshold of $29,000. I mean, you're not driving to the VA in a Lexus if you only make $29,000 a year.
Right.
What they're thinking about is increasing that income threshold by 10%. So we're talking maybe $31,000, but it will allow more veterans to come into the system slowly instead of opening it up to all people who might be eligible but who've been unable to enroll in the VA since 2003. Now, you have to remember, back in the mid-1990s, before the VA was overhauled, nobody went to the VA.
Right.
And the VA came to all the veterans organizations and said, if we did this, this, and this, can we open it up to the system? And the VA and the veterans organizations kind of like cautioned the VA, saying, you could not handle, at that particular time, almost 30 million veterans.
Right. How are you going to pay for it? That was another
exactly,
concern.
Exactly. And so it's more of a capacity question than opening it up to everybody who's eligible, every veteran, whether you're disabled. You know, and the primary mission of the VA is take care of people with service-connected disabilities and wounds.
Aha! Okay. There you go.
Big focus right there. That is a big focus right there of the VA. If you are service-connected, disabled, or wounded in the service to your nation, then the VA is there for you. And then everybody else who's, you know, a non-service-connected injury, whether you got in a car accident, you know, 16 years after you left uniform, I mean, the VA could be there for you, but we have to take care of that primary audience first.
All right. Okay. That was the good news, but you hit the button there, Joe. The VA is there for you if you're service-connected. Isn't that what you just said?
Yes.
All right. Okay. Let's talk about the rumor mill in D.C. And, you know, it's got to be a pretty strong rumor if the major veterans organizations took time to write a letter to the President of the United States. The VA is supposed to be there to care for our veterans, especially our service-connected veterans, people who have served, who have become ill, sick, injured, or wounded while wearing the uniform, while serving their country. Our nation has certain obligations to those people, and the concern is now, and stop me if I'm wrong on this, Joe, the concern is now that the, you know, some creative accounting in this new budget, call it what you will, the new administration is proposing that service-connected veterans who obtain care at a VA facility because of their service connection, VA is going to charge their insurance companies for that treatment. Is that the rumor?
That is the rumor. And we have talked with administration officials. We've talked with senior VA officials. And nobody has disavowed that rumor. So when people don't want to really talk about it and they keep saying wait till the full budget details come out next month in April, it kind of like gives a lot of validity to what that rumor is.
Yeah, absolutely, because otherwise they'd be saying, well no, we're not going to do that.
Yeah.
Joe, I don't understand this, and I'm sure millions of other veterans don't understand it, but I, on the political side of this, holy smokes, you know, President Obama's a smart guy. He's got some smart people in his administration. A new VA secretary, General Shinseki. Why in the hell, who in the hell would suggest something like this? I mean, isn't it political suicide?
We absolutely have no idea where the idea originated. What we do know is an extremely bad idea. And the VFW, along with the 10 other major veterans organizations, we're basically enlisting every member, every auxiliary member, and all of America to put an end to this policy proposal. You're absolutely correct. Right now, the VA charges third-party insurance for non-service-connected care and treatment.
And we don't have any problem with that.
We don't have a problem with that. You know, basically, let's say, for example, I'm a war amputee, and I go to the VA because I have the flu. I have third-party health insurance. They bill the third-party health insurance.
That's fair.
I don't have a problem with that. But if I go to the VA, what the proposal is to charge my third-party health insurance for service-connected treatment and care. So I need a new prosthesis, and I go to the VA, and they end up charging my health insurance.
All right. Some people might say, well, so what? You got insurance. What's wrong with charging the insurance?
There's a lot of negative impacts to that. First of all, it's going to increase out-of-pocket premiums for service-connected disabled veterans.
Because the more you use your insurance, mm-hmm. it drives costs of insurance up, right?
The less you get in, the more your premiums are going to go up. Another factor is you got veterans and their families might not be able to obtain or retain their private health insurance because of an increase.
If they have some sort of chronic type condition because of their service connection where they have to make frequent visits to the hospital, that insurance company is going to drop them like a hot potato.
We all know that a lot of health insurances do not pay out for pre-existing conditions. So let's say you have a combat wound. They all of a sudden say, that's a pre-existing condition.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you could really think about a lot.
That could lead to a lot of other conditions.
It's a nightmare scenario.
Yeah.
Especially now, you're looking at the new wounded and the new veterans coming out who are service-connected disabled. What civilian company is going to want to hire them now? It may disencourage them to hire disabled vets because they know their internal health insurance is going to go up.
Exactly.
I got a question, Jerry. Are they talking about this policy on behalf of the newly wounded that are coming into the program, or is this a kind of a retro thing that will encompass all of the wounded?
Well, I would say, and Joe would know this better than I would, but I don't know how they could create a separate group of,
right,
quote, newly wounded. It would be...
So all these families...
Not just wounded, but service-connected, Randy.
Right.
That means if you got malaria or, you know, whatever.
So all these families that have counted on the VA solely for years for their treatment and doing it through the VA, all of a sudden then, like Joe was talking about, some of these families, they couldn't afford their private health insurance. They got to go out and get some.
No, not necessarily. Right. They're talking about billing private health insurance for those veterans who have it.
Who
have it.
All right. Okay. Aside from driving up insurance costs.
Now the details till April.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. The details of this. Devil is the director of our Washington office said, Bob Wallace, the devil's in the details.
Yeah,
this.
Right.
But Joe, more importantly, aside from the possibility of one losing private health insurance, B, driving those premiums up, C, jeopardizing someone's possibility of getting hired into a job because of the potential of raising the insurance cost in the company. There's something much deeper than that.
Yeah. This breaks a sacred trust that the government and their veterans have in one another. And, you know, you go back to the history of the VFW. 1899, our forefathers came home from the Philippine insurrection and the Spanish-American War, and they came back to a government that bore no responsibility to care for their wounds or their rehabilitation.
That's right. They came back from that, from those wars, sick, you know, yellow fever, all sorts of things. And, yeah, they had to take care of themselves.
Yeah, we don't ever want to go back to those days, because right now the government is taking care of our service-connected, disabled, and wounded,
and
how it should be.
And that's always something that that we've known as veterans, guys like you and me, that, you know, you served in Somalia, you know, I was in Vietnam, but we knew, or we thought anyway, we had some confidence that if we were hurt, if we got sick, if we were wounded, the government would take care of us, would take care of those conditions. What the hell kind of message are we sending to our service people today who are being, you know, these horrendous injuries because of IEDs, amputations, traumatic brain injury, post-traumatic stress disorder, the list goes on. What the hell kind of message are we sending to them?
It's the wrong message, you know. And, you know, we, the VFW and all veterans, we are in the same boat as the rest of America is within this economic crisis. But the thought of billing disabled veterans for the care they receive from their own government, it's outrageous. It's something that will not be allowed to happen.
Hey, Joe, we're going to take a break. Jerry's got a scenario to lay on you that could apply to any veteran. We're going to do that when we come back right here on the National Defense.
Seems like yesterday, but it was long ago. Jane, it was lovely. She was a queen of my night. There in the darkness with the radio playing low, and the secrets that we shared.
Welcome back to National Defense. Randy Miller along with Jerry Newberry. Joe Davis, Director of Public Affairs in Washington for the VFW, is our guest. All right, Jerry, what's the scenario?
So here's a scenario, Joe. Somebody comes back from Iraq or Afghanistan. Say they're missing their foot. Traumatic brain injury. And they got some post-traumatic stress disorder going on. But they're lucky enough to have a job, and they have insurance. They go to VA. You know, we all know how smooth the VA system goes, the paperwork. So they charge the insurance company. The insurance company, and they're not always the best in handling claims. They're slow, or they lose the paperwork, or whatever. What happens? That veteran, you know, starts getting calls from collection agencies.
Could be. Right now, I have health. I'm a military retiree, so obviously I have TRICARE, which is their retirement insurance. But I also have a supplement. So whatever TRICARE doesn't pay, my supplement picks up. But I also have a copay. You know, it may be small, but the thing is, that is coming out of my pocket. My premiums for the supplement comes out of my pocket. And I know that all America right now is, you know, I mean, we're suffering through this economic crisis together. But we do not want to charge disabled and wounded veterans for the health care that this government has an inherent responsibility of providing. That is totally unfair. And if there's one thing Americans believe in, they believe in the fundamental rule of fairness.
Absolutely. And you're right. This isn't fair. I have the letter that was written to President in front of me. And how many groups are on this? 10 or 12?
Yeah, I'm just looking at that. I mean, that is
American Legion, AMVETS, Blinded Veterans, Disabled American Veterans, Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans, Jewish War Veterans, Military Officers Association of America, Military Order of the Purple Heart, Paralyzed Veterans of America, Veterans of Foreign Wars, Vietnam Veterans of America. I'm going to read a couple of paragraphs from this, Joe. As you know, the mission of the VA is to care for him who shall have borne the battle, and for his widow and his orphan. Similarly, the VA emphasizes that it will provide veterans the world-class benefits and services they have earned, and to do so by adhering to the highest standards of compassion, commitment, excellence, professionalism, integrity, accountability, and stewardship. Unfortunately, the proposal to bill veterans for the care of their service-connected disabilities ignores the most important aspect of this vision, that their care has been earned. This proposal ignores the solemn obligation that this country has to care for those men and women who have served this country with distinction and were left with the wounds and scars of that service. The blood spilled in service for this nation is the premium that service-connected veterans have paid for their earned care. That says it all.
And it's,
this
and
country
it,
has an obligation.
Yeah.
The blood spilled in service to this nation, that's the premium. They've already paid a damn premium.
Yep, absolutely. And you talk about a letter of solidarity. The number of groups and the power of those numbers that are listed on that letter.
Yeah.
How can anybody look at that and not take a strong look at what this is about?
Any American who has a sense of justice,
yep,
or like Joe said, a sense of fairness, is going to get on board with us. Joe, what can people do? People should be really pissed off right now and outraged. What can they do to stop this?
First of all, they need to write their representatives and write their senators and basically let them know that they expect, as constituents, as voting constituents, they fully expect their representatives and their senators to kill this once it comes to Congress.
So, I'm going to ask your opinion. Not just me and you, Joe, as friends, politically, what do you think the backlash is going to be on the administration or an elected official of Congress who lets this happen?
It's not going to be good. I mean, every member of Congress wants to be reelected. As far as the administration, and, we absolutely have no idea where this idea originated. Budget comes out of the Office of Management and Budget. Now, whether the president knows about it or his senior staff knows about it, we don't know. But the thing is, OMB, the last I checked, still works for the president. So we are not happy. We are not pleased. We have voiced this displeasure, and we have also instructed America. We've got a call to action across this country. We want everybody to let their congressional delegations know that we absolutely refuse to accept this one. And this is one reason why we have all these veterans organizations and the VFW here on Capitol Hill. I mean, you've got 32,000 registered lobbyists in Congress who represent 20,000 individual clients who really don't care about veterans or service members or their family members.
Right.
So we're here to keep Congress and the administration focused on we are important too.
Right. Joe, we could talk about this all day. I got to clean up some of this foam that's coming out of Jerry's mouth. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks, brother.
Joe Davis, Director of Public Affairs, Washington, the VFW. We're going to talk about much more next week right here on the National Defense. And remember, you can always listen to us. Always get us at www.thenationaldefense.com.